4. It was 10 past midnight. The lobby of the terminal had been given over to the early morning people. Servicemen at the end of their leaves, harried-looking women riding herd on scratchy up-too-late children, businessmen with pouches of weariness under their eyes, cruising kids in big boots and long hair, some of them with packs on their backs, a couple with cased tennis rackets. The loudspeaker system announced arrivals and departures and paged people like some omnipotent voice in a dream. Andy and Charlie sat side by side at desks with TVs bolted to them. The TVs were scratched and dented and painted dead black. To Andy, they looked like sinister futuristic cobras. He plugged his last two quarters into them so they wouldn't be asked to leave the seats. Charlie's was showing a rerun of The Rookies, and Johnny Carson was yucking it up with Sonny Bono and Buddy Hackett on Andy's. "Daddy, do I have to?" Charlie asked for the second time. She was on the verge of tears. "Honey, I'm used up," he said. "We have no money. We can't stay here." "Those bad men are coming?" she asked, and her voice dropped to a whisper. "I don't know." Thud, thud, thud in his brain. Not a riderless black horse anymore. Now it was mail sacks filled with sharp scraps of iron being dropped on him from a fifth-story window. "We have to assume they are. How could I get money?" He hesitated and then said, "You know." The tears began to come and trickle down her cheeks. "It's not right. It's not right to steal." "I know it," he said, "but it's not right for them to keep coming at us either. I explained it to you, Charlie, or at least I tried." "About little bad and big bad?" "Yes, lesser and greater evil." "Does your head really hurt?" "It's pretty bad," Andy said. There was no use telling her that in an hour, or possibly two, it would be so bad he would no longer be able to think coherently. No use frightening her worse than she already was. No use telling her that he didn't think they were going to get away this time. "I'll try," she said, and got out of the chair. "Poor Daddy," she said, and kissed him. He closed his eyes. The TV played on in front of him, a faraway babble of sound in the midst of the steadily growing ache in his head. When he opened his eyes again, she was just a distant figure, very small, dressed in red and green, like a Christmas ornament, bobbing away through the scattered people on the concourse. "Please, God, let her be all right."